Well, hi everybody. Maybe a few little things went on there before we started, but we're in this section about the condition of the causal body, and this is our 11th program, and we're beginning on page 38 when it comes to Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary. That's where we are. And let's just check and see that. Yeah, we're pretty good. So here is this issue. Certain things need to be remembered, says Master DK. And the first here is the factor of periodicity. Egos that are in incarnation and egos that are out of incarnation are differentiated and capable of different work. Okay. Egos whose reflections are in incarnation are more limited than those who are not. Well, that's interesting. The use of the word reflection. So we do have points of groupings on the higher planes, even if we are in incarnation and those higher sources are reflected in our incarnating presence. It is almost as if higher self were directed downwards or willingly circumscribing itself to three-dimensioned existence, whereas the egos out of incarnation are not so limited but work in another direction or dimension. Well, we can, you know, think of the downward gazing ego or the downward gazing soul, and we can imagine that there's less need for downward gazing when the incarnational process is not occurring. So, see, even now we do have sources and groupings. We are members of inner groups right now, including, finally, a monadic grouping on the monadic plane, and even finally, a liberated condition, relatively speaking, on the logoic plane, though still within the spheres of Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. So anyway, the difference lies in the focusing of attention during physical plane life. The matter is hard for you to grasp, is it not so? Well, I wonder if there's not a dual consciousness occurring. The difference is hard to grasp, but the entire, you know, maybe we can split the consciousness, maybe the entirety of the egoic consciousness or the higher consciousness is not involved with the incarnational necessities and is somewhat involved on its own plane. And then when there is no need to be an attentive downward gazing soul because the incarnational process is not going on, then more attentiveness can be liberated for what is happening on the higher planes. I scarcely know how to express the difference more clearly. It is perhaps as if the incarnating egos were more positive and the non-incarnating egos more negative, or what can we say, more withdrawn within themselves. Well, if DK is having a little trouble expressing this to us, I guess we know that we may not get the entire picture. But, you know, there is kind of a dual consciousness operative. And even right now, here we are in incarnation, and the higher aspect of ourselves is attentive to some inner things. And that's why we're told, you know, do not always importune the ego, because it has its own affairs to take care of. So it's kind of a dual consciousness, a simultaneous consciousness of the soul in incarnation and the soul on its own plane, or even a kind of consciousness which is higher than the soul on its own plane. Let us say triadal consciousness and even monadic consciousness. All of those are parallel states, and they are simultaneously operative. All right. The factor of activity is operative here. Let's see, what do we have? The factor of periodicity. Certain things need to be remembered. Okay, so one is the factor of periodicity. And, you know, we'll make it red to stand out. And then another to be borne in mind is the factor of activity. Okay. And this is largely a matter of ray and affects closely the relationship between egos. Those on similar rays coalesce and vibrate more readily to each other, and we might say more resonantly to each other than those on different rays. And it is only as the second or wisdom aspect is developed that synthesis becomes possible. In other words, how to handle relationship with other egos how to wisely handle relationship with other egos which are similar to us, you know, like the second ray type having to get along with the first ray type. Even that was an issue in the old arcane school, I'm told, you know, that there was an instance, I think, where one of the first ray types sold some treasured books of the second ray types because money was needed for world goodwill and, you know, things that came under more of the first ray province. They just, you know, didn't understand each other so well. So the conflicts that exist between people as individuals on the inner side as well as the outer can be ray based They certainly are astrologically based. We know about squares and oppositions and, you know, in general, about inharmonious aspects. But if the rays are harmonious, there will be less difficulty with the inharmonious astrological aspects. So in a way, you know, the rays become finally more significant than the astrological factors, even though, you know, they all play their role, as we have seen when analyzing the rays and astrological direct influences of the nations and the indirect influences. The rays are really, finally, especially as the nation really begins to evolve, the paramount factor. Okay, so there's this factor of periodicity. You know, going in and out of incarnation with changes. So, periodicity is the going in and out of incarnation with resultant changes in the capability of the inner sources, more distracted. It's not really a good word, but more distracted when there is incarnation, and less so when the period of non-incarnation is occurring. That just makes sense, you know, if you have to do two things at the same time, maybe it's easier to do one thing at a time than handling two things, although they say that, you know, some people are very good at multitasking and that certainly women are better at it than men, I'm so often told. On the third subplane of the mental plane, where most egos are found at this point, or most, if we call them egos, we're going to talk about consciousness within the causal body. On the third subplane of the mental plane, egos are separated into groups, individual separation exists not. But group separation can be felt. And that is interesting, I think. Yeah, just adjusting all my gizmos here. On the third subplane of the mental plane, egos are separated into groups. Individual separation exists not, but group separation can be felt, incidental to ray and point in evolution. So we might say that not only ray quality, but point in evolution determines the degree of relationship and the sensed affiliation. I mean, you know, we can be on the same ray as someone, but let's say they have a whole lot more experience on that ray than we do. It will not be possible to be related to them in any complete manner, because while the greater includes the lesser does not include the greater. On the second subplane, the groups become, let's just get this straight. And we'll try to you know, have this stand out. On the second subplane, the groups merge and become merged and blended and blend from their 49 groups, and from their 49 groups are formed by merging 42. Okay. So on every plane, there is something occurring, maybe a higher degree of merging as we raise the subplane that we are attending to. The process of synthesis might be tabulated here as follows, and here it gives the general grouping. 49 groups on the third subplane. This is all from the mental plane, you know. I wonder if I can... I wonder if I can get this... Maybe not. 42 groups on the second subplane, and still a further merging into 35 groups. So each time, 7 groups are disappearing or merging into the larger number of groups. How that all happens and why a particular 7 disappear, I don't know if that's really given, or can we estimate why it should be so. And DK has a reason for writing 7 times 7, 7 times 6, 7 times 5. Interestingly enough, if we reverse those numbers, the 7 times 5 makes 35, and those are the 35 vortices of fire that make up a master, or that are characteristic of a master. And the 7 times 6 is the 42 groups, which I infer, well, the 42 vortices of fire, which I infer to be the vortices of a Chohan of the 6th degree, and then finally 49 vortices of fires. So it's going in the opposite direction, which the 49 vortices, which are characteristic of a Chohan of the 7th degree. So basically we have, or we'll have 49 vortices active on the cosmic physical plane. Let's see here. If we look at this, we might find, yeah, there it is. We see how 7 sevens are constantly disappearing into 1, 7 into 1, 7 into 1. However, maybe if we were to include the other planets and so forth, each such absorptive one would be absorbing a still different 7. So, you know, it's just we have here a chart which has its limitations because we, you know, can't draw it easily. Maybe in a three-dimensional chart, we could draw it more easily and see how 7 might be absorbed into all the, each one of the higher 7 and not just into one of them. And then we would have basically 49 absorbed into 7. And thus it would continue. Of course, this is not so much a chart by the Tibetan as it is one that was theosophically conceived and which he saw fit to include. But it's just a representation of what the full chart would look like. Okay, then what else? On the third subplane of the Buddhic plane, we've got 28 groups. So seven more have disappeared, and on the first subplane, 21 groups. 7 times 4, 7 times 3. And so with each grouping, another 7 are absorbed or merged. And you know, we have to find our place as units of being and units of consciousness in each of these groups. We're not going to skip any, I think. I think we're, you know, simply going to find a way to locate ourselves in each one as we ascend. And, you know, it's the multiplication here that determines pretty much which plane we're going to be found on, or which plane these groups will be found on. So there are interesting, it's the 3-2-1 kind of thing, is it? 3 groupings on the higher mental plane, 2 groupings on the Buddhic plane of 28 and 21, and 1 grouping on the atomic subplane, 7 times 2. But there are 14 groups there. And, you know, somewhere we're going to find ourselves, no question about it. So even though here we are on the outer plane, exercising our capacities in a very limited way, inwardly we are part of these other groups, and we have fuller scope for expression. Now, you know, probably there's not too much expression given the atomic subplane of the Buddhic plane and the atomic subplane of the Atmic plane, because therein are found cities or powers, or thereupon are found cities or powers which are beyond that of the master. But then internally and on those higher planes, who's to say exactly what we really are? And finally, 7 times 1 leaves us with 7. So on the monadic plane, we are a member of one of the 7 great circles. And I wonder if I can find a way here to show that. There we go. I think that'll do it. Yes, and then let's look. Well, you know, they aren't circles, but they do look like there are 7 triangles. Maybe we can consider them triangles inscribed within a circle. So we're a member of one of those 7, and we're also a member of the higher 3, where we only have 7 choices, and it switches from multiples of 7 to the main number being 3. So, you know, just look at where we are here on this map And maybe, I don't know, maybe, well, this is a pretty good map. Let's see what would happen if we take it further. Well, we miss something if we take it further. So we are in one of 49 groups, one of 42 groups, one of 35 groups, one of 28 groups on the Buddhi plane, one of 21 groups on the higher part of the Buddhi plane, one of 14 groups on the Atmic plane, and one of 7 groups on the Monadic plane, and we're also one of 3 groups on the very highest levels. So we certainly do have our inner groups, and we have maybe powers that we express on those levels that we cannot fathom in our present incarnated limitations. I think there's a lot to be meditated upon when dealing with this tabulation. He says, I've given a few hints here. It is so little compared with what will later be known when those of you now studying expand the consciousness still further. But it is all I can as yet impart, and only this has been given with the intent of showing how much has to be considered when the meditation forms are duly set by the Master. How, in other words, the issue there is all this is about points to consider when assigning meditations, and one, you know, is, let's say, the high initiate or the Master when assigning these meditations. He has to take into wise consideration the egoic ray and the condition of the causal body in its relationship to the lower self and to the hierarchy. So he's doing a bit of review here, let's say. Well, so much has yet to be imparted. The Master has to, and this seems to be kind of a summary, he has to take into wise consideration the egoic ray and the condition of the causal body in its relationship to the lower self and to the hierarchy. Okay. The state of the body must be known, and its content. Otherwise, how do you know what to add to it through meditation? Its relationship to other egos must be duly considered, for all is in group formation. Meditation must therefore be given, which is in line with the group to which the ego is assigned. By whom and by what? The planetary logos. For as each man meditates, he contacts not only his own ego, but also his egoic group, you know, probably here on the higher mental plane. And through the group, the Master to whom he is consequently linked, though the efficacy of a meditation depends upon the work being done in an occult manner and under law. The group significance of meditation is little understood, but the above thoughts are recommended for your wise study. So, you know, here we have, what can we say? it's basically what he's been dealing with, only maybe in a slightly different order. Here it's a little more, a little less outlined, but the major points are given. So this is a summary of the points given in the pages above. Yeah. The egoic ray, the 6 points, basically. The egoic ray, personality ray. Let's go back to see if we can see those 6 points. We should be able to see them. We should be able to. Well, let's see. They should be listed right here somewhere. Well, I see if I had gone just a little further, I would have seen the 6 points, all of the 6 points. So much the master must take into consideration. Here in yellow, it is summarized, but then more in the outline form, we find it here. The ray of the pupil's ego or higher self. Notice how ego and higher self are considered to be equivalent. The ray of his personality or lower self. And I suppose the relationship of those two rays. The karmic condition of his threefold lower nature. That's point three. Number four, the condition of his causal body. We've been working on that. And then number five, the immediate need of the period and his availability. And then the groups, inner and outer, with which he may be affiliated. I think we have not yet dealt with that. But the tabulation that we have dealt with, where we find 7 times 7, 7 times 6, 7 times 5, 7 times 4, 7 times 3, 7 times 2, 7 times 1. And hence, 49, 42, 35, 28, 21, 14, and 7. That's a very important tabulation, and it shows us something of which we are hardly aware, our inner affiliations. Okay, so today we will consider factor 5 in deciding methods of meditation. There's so many things presented in outline form. The necessity is to keep them straight somehow. And we'll deal with the need of the particular period and the suitability of the man to meet that need. After all, different meditations will be assigned when there are different social needs. Civilizational needs. Okay. Let us first of all briefly recapitulate. Well, we've been doing a lot of that, and I tend to want to recapitulate because it's so easy to lose the outline form in the many outlines and subcategories and sub-sub and sub-sub-sub-sub, well, a lot of subs. So let us, first of all, briefly recapitulate, for the value of repetition or reiteration is profound. And, you know, it's quite frustrating not to have the repetition, because then the points that were to be established in the mind, they are washed away by multiplicity and confusion. We have taken up briefly the factor of the egoic ray as it is considered by a teacher in assigning a meditation. And we have seen how each ray aimed at the same goal along a different route, and that each ray necessitated a different type of meditation. Yes, you know, reviewing the driving into, eventually, of the first ray, and the inclusiveness of the second, and the accumulativeness of the third, and the harmonization of the fourth through color and sound, and the laser-like beams of the, what I joke and say is the Swiss cheese approach to ridding ourselves of the causal body eventually, and then the fiery approach of the sixth ray, and the building and mantric approach of the seventh ray. So we've taken up briefly the factor of the egoic ray. That's one. And, you know, whatever color we can do. We have touched on the modification of the meditation, because the soul, the meditation based upon the egoic ray will be modified according to the personality ray. And he's shown us something of that modification, how the soul ray bears down upon the personality ray and uses it in a particular way that is a subsidiary to the soul ray. So we have touched upon the modification of the meditation through considering the personality ray. Well, you know, my colors here are completely askew, but I'm putting something down. Then we took a look at the factor of time, you know, because karma and time are pretty identical, both under Saturn. We took up the factor of time as shown in the causal body, its point of development, and the relationship of that body to its three lower expressions, finishing yesterday, 100 years ago, with a few brief hints anent the causal body on its own level and its scope of consciousness. What he's saying here is a recapitulation, but maybe it's not quite as distinct as the outline form. All this will have indicated to you how wise must be the teacher who presumes to indicate meditation. And there are teachers who thus presume and don't have the requisite wisdom to help as completely as they otherwise might, and maybe they even do damage. No meditation that is truly and occultly suitable can be assigned by a teacher who has not the capacity of causal consciousness and contact. That's a big one to remember, because, you know, we teachers tend to say, well, why don't you meditate on this? Or maybe in this way. And DK is warning us, basically, or at least telling us that we're not wise enough to really do that, to find what is truly suitable and occultly suitable. Maybe if we, you know, had the definite causal consciousness of a master, we could do it. But otherwise, we're either maybe ineffective or either or possibly endangering. When the teacher knows the note, the rate of vibration, and the color, then he can wisely assign, but not before. Before that time, generalization only is possible, and a meditation given that may approximate the need and also be safe. So, basically, basically, let's just say I'll get rid of this. Meditations are given, but they are only of general usefulness and not of truly occult usefulness. Well, this is all part of the necessity for humility on the part of those of us who seek to be light bearers and who may make recommendations to our students and associates. We have to know our limitations in this regard, and at least, as with the medicine and the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. The very first thing, to do no harm. I guess whoever devised that oath, I suppose Hippocrates, knew what it meant to ignorantly do harm while attempting to do good. Probably one is burned first, realizing one has done so, and then tries to help others from stepping into the same mistake. Well, these are words of caution for any of us who are in the teaching field and are seeking to guide and lift. Of course, the Tibetan has given so many meditations, and basically he ended some of his work with saying, well, these are six meditations here, and they should hold you for the rest of this incarnation. So, you know, maybe the part of wisdom is to stick with them. But of course, we can meditate upon any quality, you see. If he says, if you want to love more, meditate on love. I suppose if you want to know more, meditate on light. You know, we can meditate on will. Maybe we can learn something. But if we try to bring definite occult meditations into the picture, as has been done with teachers coming from the East and maybe not knowing the difference between the Eastern body, let us say, and the Western body, damage can be done. So a cautionary tale here, really. Okay. Another factor enters now. One of the six. It's the fifth of the six. A factor that varies somewhat according to the need of the period. All cycles are not as fundamentally important, and you know, this goes for root races, maybe, and it goes for rounds in the chain, and maybe it goes for rounds in the scheme. He does tell us in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which are considered to be the major periods. And, you know, which by inference are less so. And you kind of wonder, why are they major? But, you know, maybe pondering on that, we can gather what he's trying to hint for us. I found some of those numbers quite interesting because maybe they represented certain periods, certain rounds, maybe certain root races even, which I had not thought of as the most important. The periods in a cycle that are of real moment are the termini and those where overlapping and merging occurs. You know, the ending and beginnings and the overlappings. So let's just say endings, beginnings, and overlappings. And they demonstrate on the physical plane in great revolutions, gigantic cataclysms, you know, as maybe when root races change entirely, or when maybe great Platonic years change, at whatever the demarcation may be. Probably it's a great Platonic year plus an equinoctial year. I mean, if we go, let us say, from the beginning of Aquarius backwards through Capricorn, Sagittarius, etc., and come back to the beginning of Aquarius, we can't begin with Aquarius again. We've got to go into Capricorn to create a great Platonic year ruled by Capricorn. So it's sort of like 5,920 plus 2,160 for an equinoctial year, an equinoctial period. Let's say the Platonic year ruled by Aquarius, 25,920, and then the lesser Aquarius. A normal equinoctial period of 2,160 years. And of course, we have to include overlaps in all of that. A 5,000-year overlap for the big cycle and a 500-year overlap for the lesser cycle. And who's to say when we're dealing with a 250,000-year cycle, which supposedly is the seven solar systems going once around the Pleiades, if that's possible, and then it will start again. What is the period of overlap? Because nothing just ends and then sharply in a cut and dried manner begins. Okay. So these periods of we might call them Pisces Aries periods in one sense, or Omega Alpha periods, endings and beginnings, they are the important ones. They are of real moment. The periods that are of real moment are the termini, and they result in all of these big upheavals, gigantic cataclysms, revolutions. We're in it right now, in a way. Fundamental upheavals in all three departments of hierarchy. The department of the world teacher, that of the head of a root race. I suppose the manu of a root race, and that of the ruler of civilization or of force, a Maha Chohan. I think we're in, you know, such a time now. And why is it? I mean, what is the major, major issue here? Is it the great Platonic year, or is it a cycle even greater? See, the great Platonic year is rounded off to be 25,000. And even though it's 25,920, according to the figures given to us, which are probably as accurate as can be given to us. But then there's also the 250,000 year cycle. And what is the overlap period then? If 5,000 is 20% of the 25,000 year period, then 50,000 would be 20% of the 250,000 year period. Is it possible to have such an overlap of 250,000 years? Or rather, I mean, excuse me, 50,000 years in a 250,000 year cycle? Well, the 20% model tells us that 500 years is the generalized overlap period in a cycle of 2,500 years, just like 5 would be the overlap, 50, that is, would be the overlap period in a 250-year cycle and 5 in a 25-year cycle. Those are all generalizations, of course. We can't say that these are the absolutely true figures. So at the points of merging in a cycle, cross currents are found. We have one right now going on between Aquarius and impending Aquarius and terminating Pisces. And we have bigger cross currents going on between a terminating Platonic year and an impending Platonic year ruled by Aquarius. Ending Platonic year in Pisces, beginning in Aquarius. And you kind of wonder, when we're dealing with the 250,000 year cycle, 250 and 30s, what is the major rulership of such a great cycle? Is it connected with a ray? Is it connected with a sign or a constellation in the zodiac, or a constellation in the greater zodiac, maybe a zodiac of 10 and not of 12? So it must be a profound thing and a wonderful thing to view the interplay of cycles on the third sublevel of the atmic plane, where all knowledge is found, you know, and we won't have all knowledge of all cycles, you know, maybe of the ones that particularly affect our planet at this time. So at the points of merging in a cycle, cross currents are found, and all the systems seem to be in chaotic condition. And one of the interesting statements, this For instance, there has been no true astrological accuracy. Since Egyptian times. Well, when EGY Egyptian times, and when were Egyptian times? We seem to compress that always and look at a few thousand years when the real astronomical researches take us into tens of thousands of years. And if Egypt presented to us the second root race in the Aryan Age, it was a long time ago. Accuracy. Okay. The middle part of a cycle where the incoming vibration is stabilized and the old has passed away manifests as a period of calm and apparent equilibrium. Well, that makes sense. And we are certainly not in such a period now. Maybe medieval times were, well, there were so many wars and so forth, but maybe there was an apparent equilibrium at that time, given a period of some 2,000 years. But this, how long will it be before a tranquility? Okay, let's just see here. How long before tranquility in the age of Aquarius supervenes? Right now, we're certainly in a disruptive period with the ending of the Piscean age, the normal equinoctial age, and the beginning of the Aquarian equinoctial age in maybe another 100 years or so. Tranquility. And then when it comes to a Platonic year, do we have to wait, 12,500 years or a little more before a period of tranquility exists? And does that have to do with something like the sign opposite, the sign that rules the age? Like in the age of Aquarius, it would occur in Leo. In the age of Pisces, it would occur in Virgo, and so forth. It's a very complex thing, this science of cycles. But eminently worth possessing and studying along the way until we do possess it. And we just have to be patient, So, well, there's a lot more here. And I think, given what I've been through, I don't think I can make it to some words of cheer tonight. That would be page 43, and where are we right now? We're on page 41. So, what will follow will be a an example of disturbance at the termini and tranquility, perhaps, tranquil is he. And maybe I don't know why. Oh, it's got two L's in the British spelling. And tranquility in the middle, period. It's almost as if you think about it, look at the life of a human being. We have a tough time growing up and finding our place, and then maybe we do find our place, and in the middle of life, our health is good, our faculties are with us, and we stabilize. And then as we get older, we again move towards disintegration of the vehicles, and we destabilize. So the middle period is the period when a degree of tranquility can occur. With regard to the Aquarian age, would it be that in this middle period, you know, biblically, so-called Satan is bound for 1,000 years? It's strictly symbolic writing. And you know, if we are too literal because we can't expand and modify with the mind, then we are going to err. But it is interesting to think about disturbance in the beginning and disturbance at the end, the termini, when the transitions occur. But stability and tranquility in the middle period. Well, I think I've done about an hour here. And, you know, how much can one press ahead into the night and not rob Peter to pay Paul? So probably what I'm going to do now is to call this program quits in the middle here, and then finish next time. And this has been again on the 25th, and we went up to page, was it 42? Gosh, I hope so. And if not, I'll have to come back and do something about it, straighten it out, if it's not close enough to 42. Well, it's 41. Okay, well, and then I have to go back. Yep. To 41. Okay. Now, I'll set up the next program for XX. It'll still be July. And it will be the end of program 11 that we're experiencing now. And it's 38 to 41. I wonder if maybe I'm just accomplishing 3 pages an hour. But that's okay, because we are trying to study a little bit in depth. Yes, and then we'll begin with program 12, and it will be 41 to XX, hopefully tomorrow. I mean, I'd love to keep going all through the night, but maybe that's not going to be possible. So we're taking up these questions of disturbance and tranquility, but especially disturbance given the present time in the present in the century in which this was written. So let's say, whoop, no, that's not it. We don't want that. And we're going to be taking up the factor of disturbance. Taking up the factor of disturbance at the termini, which are always points of interest. And as we know, in the old Chinese lore, may you live in interesting times was considered to be kind of a curse. Well, we're living in very interesting times, and so much is at stake regarding how we will enter the Aquarian Age, and you know how we will do with those particular energies. How we will do is not determined, but we certainly will have the help of the Christ and his hierarchy. Still much will be left to us to accomplish by human hands and human feet, as the Christ in the desert painting by Rorick seems to indicate. It's a different Christ that's out there in the desert, in his own, I think, Maya Virupa, and not in the body of Jesus, interestingly. Okay, friends, that'll be it then for tonight. Lots of love, many blessings. It's just at the stroke of midnight here. And tomorrow, well, I shouldn't say what's tomorrow, because it could be 10 years from now that you are looking at this, if you get this far. And we'll just stop the recording and go on. All the best. See you soon for our in-depth study, at least as deep as we can go. Bye-bye.